Oh, Mitch, have you been listening to some Kanye? Have you been trying to get ready? Can I make a few suggestions to you? Maybe try out On Sight, the lead track from Yeezus, one of my favorites. Maybe try out Runaway from My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. I mean, you'll have to listen to it anyway. I'm going to go old school, like some All Falls Down, perhaps would be a good choice there, or go Through the Wire, you know, where it all started. Mitch, you will have to listen to a Kanye West album because, oh, what happened? Well, the Chiefs absolutely mollywopped the Buffalo Bills. Just destroyed them. I mean, if not for taking their foot off the gas at the end of the game and an onside kick that winds up being recovered, that was going to be like a 28-point win. Throw in that Eric Fisher, you know, had his deal, which is something to talk about for the Super Bowl, but that also got them more conservative offensively. I mean, the Chiefs just rammed it down Buffalo's throat. And Mitch, it was just chef's kiss wonderful to have people in my Twitter mentions going off on me about tweeting before the game, oh, now we're going to get the GOAT send-off, the GOAT passing of the torch in the Super Bowl between Brady and Mahomes, because I had the gall to go ahead and proclaim that before the game. Like we didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, it was free money. The Chiefs were a 3-point favorite in that game. It was free money. It was free money. Mitch, you wanted to make a quick buck? All you had to do, whoever it is that's out there, log into DraftKings and you throw your life savings on Chiefs minus three. That was free money out there. And of course, now the Chiefs are heading back to the Super Bowl with an absolutely dominant performance of the cute story of the Buffalo Bills and the cute, cute Josh Allen phenomenon that swept, I almost just cursed, dummies like Matt Hasselbeck at ESPN and caught him way off guard with what happened in that game. I just want to leave the floor open to you, Mitch. How dumb do you feel by taking the side of the Buffalo Bills in that game?
Well, if you saw the tell the tape, the all-important, you know, nationally televised tale of the tape that showed that Josh Allen is the top quarterback over Patrick Mahomes.
Yes,
If I would have known that the Buffalo defense was just going to play like cowards all night long, I would have never have made the bet. But they played like, okay, we're going to give up 35 points, but we just need the offense to score 36. Okay, that's all we need. Just go out there and score 36, and we'll take care of the rest. It was actually they gave up 38. So the offense needed to score 39. But the, my God, the Buffalo defense, it was like they didn't want to even really try after that first quarter. Because after that first quarter, you know, it was, I don't think the Chiefs scored at that point, but the Chiefs, you know, in a 10-minute span, it was over because they scored three straight touchdowns. And Buffalo was, they didn't even want to try afterwards on defense.
But
they
Buffalo
weren't even, they were giving up all these big plays.
Was completely spotted 10 points. I know they only scored 9. They were spotted 10. They couldn't even take full advantage of that. And even then, it was still a bleep kicking. I mean, what you're watching, people, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you all realize this, is the 95-96 Chicago Bulls. You're watching the 72-10 Bulls. You're watching a team that was going 15-1, if not for the end of the year where nobody's playing against the Chargers, and now, led by the new Michael Jordan, is heading into a second consecutive Super Bowl. You're watching the 95-96 Chicago Bulls. I saw somebody on Twitter say, this is like watching peak Warriors, except there's no Draymond Green to make you hate them. And while that is a pretty apt analogy, I think the 95-96 Bulls are better than any of those Warriors teams. I think it resonates more to say it's the 95-96 Bulls. And I don't think that Steph Curry is quite on the level of Michael Jordan or Patrick Mahomes. Because nobody is. Nobody is. Doing that with turf toe, coming off of getting his bell rung to the point where he was woozy, and no problem. I mean, Mahomes is insane. He's absolutely insane. So, Mitch, please don't ever bet against Patrick LeVon Mahomes again. That would be my only advice to you.
Well, it's
if
funny
you know
you say that.
What is good for you, don't bet against him. Don't try and run out there with a graphic telling me that Stephon Diggs, I almost said Quandre Diggs, he's not better than Tyreek Hill either, but that Stephon Diggs is better than Tyreek Hill. Watch the 71-yard slant catch and run and get back to me. I mean, life is good as a Chiefs fan. Never have I felt more empowered or emboldened by anything than I do watching the Kansas City Chiefs right now.
Well, I actually will bet on Patrick Mahomes losing again, because I think we should go double or nothing on this. Because the bet was I have to listen to my ugly, bright, straight dream by Kanye West. How about make it two albums? And if the Buccaneers win, it's Back to the Future. Did you see that Back to the Future graphic by Sports Illustrated, by the way? Want to talk about a chef's kiss?
Yeah, well, they're taunting you. They were taunting you because
they encouraged me to make this bet.
They're taunting you because I will not be watching it, and the reason I'm not watching it is because of those that are depicted in said Back to the Future.
All right, so I guess you're not afraid to go double or nothing here.
Of course I'm not afraid to go double or nothing.
Against the world's greatest quarterback.
Patrick Mahomes in his absolute prime, perhaps even before his prime, against the decrepit, aging carcass of Tom Brady. Yes, Mitch, I will take the bet. Yes, double or nothing. That's fine. The Bucs were not even the better team. Okay, Green Bay choked that game away. The Bucs were not the better team. The Kansas City Chiefs will be Super Bowl champions. And you will not hear the end of it. I will be just as menacing and self-righteous on Twitter and on the air as I am right now and as I was on Sunday a couple of weeks from now. When the Chiefs get to do that to Brady, take the GOAT title away from Tom in his home stadium, it is going to be beautiful.
I think you're watching Back to the Future after February 7th.
Boy, who sounds more confident here? Where's Mason at the game KMAN? Who sounds more confident, John or Mitch?
You're talking about competing against the greatest of all time. This is Tom Brady's seventh Super Bowl. This is where he is most comfortable. He is 6-3. All right. I saw a graphic 2 days ago, and that was statistically, Tom Brady is more likely to win a Super Bowl than Steph Curry is to hit a three.
Okay. Cool. He's 43 years old. And he's never
and still killing it.
Never gone up against Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl.
A wild card team to the Super Bowl. Three straight road games.
It's great. Through the NFC. Congratulations. That's great.
Against an MVP.
Take on Pat.
Doesn't look like the MVP is with Kansas City this year.
I mean, okay. Well, that's just, you know, you can be the one to hitch your wagon to the bringing it to Patrick Mahomes train here. The trying to blaspheme against Patrick Mahomes. You and Matt Hasselbeck can be pulling that thing all the way to Jabroni of the Week, which will be at 5:50 today, by the way. Now, it's a difficult transition from that to K-State basketball. Never have the contrast been as stark of the two things that we're going to be talking about today throughout the show as white-hot, as brilliant as the Chiefs are. It's the opposite with K-State basketball. And the problem here is it's not just that Bruce Weber right now is losing games, and it's not even just that Bruce Weber is losing games by a lot. It's that Bruce Weber is losing games with these historically bad performances. I mean, 50 points backed up by, what was it, 47? Yeah, 47 against West Virginia in a game where your first half featured more turnovers than points. There are a bunch of numbers I can rattle off to you. 28 turnovers in a game for K-State, sixth most all time. Sixth most all time in a game. More turnovers than points in the first half. It was a top five all-time worst points per possession game for K-State, and those stats, albeit, only go back to 2002, the KSU underscore fan puts together. But in the last two decades, That's a top five worst offensive performance for this team. Like, we know all the reasons. You can find them in the game notes. You can hear them on the TV broadcast that K-State has battled a lot of continuity issues and there have been injuries. There's been COVID. But, man, it's a historically inept offensive performance against a West Virginia team that had just missed 2 weeks. Those guys hadn't played or practiced in 2 weeks. Bob Huggins had reason to come out and lob excuses out there going into and after this game because of what the Mountaineers have recently dealt with. And they still came out and just rolled on a fairly unimpressive night by West Virginia standards as well. That's another part of this too. Like Derek Culver, West Virginia's best player, he's 2 of 8 and he had foul trouble. I mean, it's not good. It's not good. Like, if you want to hold up the defenses that border on excuses, whatever it is you want to deem them, man, like, there are cases to be made if you're losing games, but, like, you feel like you're there. I mean, they're losing games, losing them by a lot, and losing them in ways that are historic. And it continues this run of the last 2 years that is now historic in its futility. And so that, one, wears on everybody that's trying to watch it game after game, week after week. And two, just makes it harder to use any of those defenses and have them find any ears that are not deaf. I mean, they're going to fall on deaf ears more and more the more that these performances come up. And Mitch, by the way, guess who's next? The Baylor Bears.
The Bears.
The Baylor Bears, who in Bruce Weber's words, beat K-State by infinity last time they played.
Yeah, pretty close, yeah.
31 points to be exact. And what did you tell me earlier today? What, the next four Big 12 games are who?
There's KU, there's Texas, Texas Tech.
Baylor.
And then Baylor.
So there's the next four Big 12 games. KU, Texas Tech, Texas, Baylor. I mean, where do we think this thing's going? We're talking about, at that point, an 11-game losing streak. Texas A&M game sandwiched in between there this weekend. Man, I don't know. It just, there are things to talk about with this team. I think there's too much pressure right now on Nigel Pack based on what continues to happen. And a part of that is that you're losing these games in historic fashion. And that's the only thing left to point to at this time. Other than, like, hey, I hope we just get more cohesive throughout the year. But the only thing left, like, everything started to come back. There's only one missing hole, and that's Nigel Pack.
A freshman.
He better be ready to roll.
Out of shape because he's been out with COVID. Mm-hmm. And K-State just in such no man's land because they keep winning. Like you said, they're losing they keep losing in historic fashion. It feels like it's impossible for them to win any of these games because it just – look at the numbers, they're so overmatched, it doesn't matter who they play, unless they're going to play Iowa State because the Cyclones haven't won a game yet. So, yes, K-State is not dead last in the Big 12. It is still Iowa State, but they're playing down like 7 players right now.
No, 1% chance, according to Ken Palm. 1% chance tomorrow. So you're saying there's a chance. Now, last week, I thought it might have been the death of Baylor and Newell's ballot and that bit. We got new life this week. There is a Twitter fight happening in Jesse Newell's mentions because of his ballot. It's heated up, baby. That's coming up next. So there's an American team for the Senior Bowl?
Yeah.
Are they playing the Russians?
Well, I wouldn't think they would play anybody outside the United States because, you know, travel bans and COVID. So I don't know what they're going to have to do.
They just dress the other team up in the USSR, like hockey jerseys that they're wearing in the Miracle on Ice. Like, what is the other team? Can you find me the name of the other team?
Yeah, I'm looking. It's going to be a minute here.
All right. It's not that important. That just struck me as particularly funny.
I think it's kind of important now. I think we need to find out.
Well, I mean,
so your prediction is the Russians.
Well, it would be. We got pretty cozy with them over the last 4 years. Who's our big enemy? China? China? Would that be the enemy now? I don't know.
All right, so it's just the national team. American team versus the national team.
Oh, okay.
So
they're playing the Washington Nationals.
So the national team is coached by the Dolphins coaching staff, and for one game, Wyatt Hubert, his coach will be Matt Rhule, because it's the Panthers coaching the American team.
Okay. It's cool, I guess. We have some controversy here with everybody's favorite segment. It finally got the juice that it needed. I thought Baylor and Newell's ballot was set to die an unfortunate death because last week, Jesse Newell did not show up on the most extreme ballots. He did not show up on the worst ballots. Either of those lists, according to College Poll Tracker. But then I saw, not only this week is Newell back in his rightful spot atop both of those lists, but there is Twitter controversy as well. Let's get to it.
Tell me where in the world is
Baylor in Newell's ballot. Baylor is number two. Baylor is number two.
Got it right again.
Thank you to Pentatonix. That's what I'm going to do. We're just going to call them Pentatonix every time now. Thank you for the lead-in here from Pentatonix. According to collegepolltracker.com, Jesse Newell had the lowest-rated ballot.
There we go.
This week, minus 79. Now, he's been up to minus 200-something before. This time, just minus 79. But still, impressive nonetheless. He also tops the list of most extreme ballots. There are a lot of choices here. Illinois, he has 11 spots away from where they're ranked. West Virginia, 6. Colorado, 9. USC, 8. Florida, 10. Loyola, 13. UConn, 9. And then here at the bottom of the top 25 is where the controversy lies. Jesse Newell covers who, Mitch?
The Kansas Jayhawks.
He has the Missouri Tigers ranked 25th in the country.
Oh.
The Missouri Tigers.
Rivalry's never dead.
Are ranked 12th in the actual AP poll. So he has Mizzou 13 spots lower than what the AP poll has them at. Being a Kansas beat writer, this, as you can imagine, sparked some controversy. And Jesse Newell's mentions have been absolutely flooded because of it. And it all started with a digital content producer. No, excuse me, the director of social media at Mizzou sending a tweet out that said two at AP top 25 voters graduated from Kansas. Their respective ranking for at Mizzou Hoops this week, Jesse Newell, 25th, Zach Klein, not ranked. So that drove a lot of conversation. 671 likes on that bad baby for Sean Davis, a.k.a. Sean Dizzle, 77. Some guy named Sean Dizzle is taking down Jesse Newell. And then it turned into Carrington Harrison, a host at 610 Sports in Kansas City, who is a Mizzou guy. He threw out there a comment about it, and that prompted Jesse. That tweet has since been deleted, by the way, so I can't read it to you. But Jesse then sent this tweet out in response to Carrington that's still out there. He said, God bless these folks who understand, one, exactly what I do with my poll each week, two, exactly why KU would be ahead of MU, three, exactly why it has nothing to do with what school I cover, four, but still make these comments anyway to incite the fans of their own school. So the accusation there being levied is that Carrington was sicking Mizzou fans onto Jesse to come after him for the poll.
Well, let me point something out about Jesse Newell and him putting the Mizzou Tigers at number 25. All right, so Missouri is actually ranked 12th in the nation. Tonight they play at Auburn. Now, Missouri is 10-2. Auburn is 9-7. Now, I don't know if there's a certain situation going on with COVID in Mizzou. However, Auburn is a favorite tonight. A near 500 team is favored to beat number 12 Missouri. So, Does Newell know something that Vegas knows as well, or something we don't know, or maybe there's just something COVID-wise going on, but Auburn is a 2.5-point favorite.
Well, I'm actually with you in that it's not as bad as it's being made out to be. Mizzou is 32nd in KenPom, which I know Mitch will scoff at, but that is what Jesse uses along with other advanced analytics to rank teams. So Mizzou is closer to where in fact, Jesse's being pretty generous there, considering how he typically sticks pretty close to the KenPom rankings. And I'm with you. I do not think Missouri is the 12th best team in the country. However, you do have to understand that as an AP voter, in particular an AP voter in 2021, when everybody can now see your poll and everybody now has direct access to you because of Twitter, you're going to have to deal with this. That's a reality of the situation. So I'm sure that's not the most fun thing in the world to have an opposing fan base just totally flooding your mentions. But that's a necessary evil. With great power comes great responsibility. And if you want the power of being an AP voter, you're going to have to deal with College Poll Tracker existing. You're going to have to deal with the opposing fans. That's just the deal.
And where did you say Newell has KU at right now?
They are... Hang on.
Because KU right now in the AP poll is number 15. Okay, so once again, Newell has KU ranked lower than what they actually are. But he's been doing that the whole time. I mean, should we not throw him a bone for kind of being right about that?
I'm throwing Jesse a bone as far as the merits of his actual poll are concerned.
Because it's really weird. So I looked up the Big 12 standings, and of course, you know, K-State's in ninth place or 1-7. But just two spots above that, just two, you'll find the Kansas Jayhawks at 4-4.
Totally fair. Jesse's poll is fine, and I respect that he has a methodology that he sticks to. But you do that, you're going to ruffle some feathers, and that comes with the territory. Comes with the territory. Someone wants to throw me an AP vote or a Heisman vote or something like that, you all can look at it and criticize it as much as you want. My J is not big enough for that, however.
Well, and, you know, we haven't really had a chance to talk Mitch Pom and the Jayhawks, but I would say Newell's actually probably going with Mitch Pom more than Ken Pom when it comes to KU, because, you know, Mitch Pom has been saying all along how the Jayhawks just aren't to par this year like they would be in the past.
Don't shoehorn Mitch Pom in here. This is Jesse Newell's segment.
Hey, just wait until K-State visits Allen Fieldhouse in a couple weeks.
I'd like to wait for that one. There's too much pressure on one cat. We'll tell you who it is coming up next.
Yeah.
Tell me where in the world is Baylor in Newell's ballot. Well, the losses continue to pile up for K-State, and seems like the pressure and frustration, both of those things are mounting right now for Bruce Weber as K-State's head coach, which you can imagine is natural. But I fear that too much of that is going to come down on Nigel Pack. He is the one player that's still out due to an injury, or COVID, rather. There have been so many players that have missed time because of injuries, because of COVID, that's turned into a big storyline. We've heard a lot about it. We've heard a lot about it from Bruce Weber. Nigel Pack is the only remaining piece that's not actually back now. So the team is coming off of two historically inept offensive performances. They will get Nigel Pack back for the game tomorrow against Baylor. That was confirmed earlier today by Bruce. He's going to be coming back, but I fear the expectations are too high, and I fear a lot of that is coming out because of what the move has been from Bruce and people associated with the men's basketball program right now. And that is to position it as, hey, we've been hurt big time by injuries and COVID, and in particular, we've lost Nigel Pack. Listen to this answer from Bruce Weber when he was asked what the difference is between where the offense was at before the last four or five games, which have been so brutal.
I think there's one person
I think we all know who it is. He hasn't been there since that Texas Tech game. He gives us a ball handler. He gives us a shooter. He gives us composure. He gives us intelligence. And, you know, nothing against the other guys. You need a guy that can run the show. And even though he's a freshman, he gave us that opportunity. The problem is now we got to put a lot of pressure on him, and he hasn't played basketball in a while.
There was in the answer in and of itself. But when that is the pivot from, hey, these performances have been so bad, and the pivot is, well, injuries and COVID, and we still don't have Nigel back. Every other leaf has fallen off of that tree so far. Like, there goes the injuries excuse, because everybody's back. There are 10 scholarship players. There goes most of the COVID stuff, because Surrey Lewis and Antonio Gordon, they're back. I mean, the only thing left is Nigel. And here he comes, and I think there is something to, not only do you lose the point production, 10 points per game, not only do you lose a guy who can really shoot it, but also you lose somebody that can help space the floor and provide an actual legitimate threat for defenses to worry about, and there can be some things to come off of that offensively by getting him back. I fully believe all of that. But is it enough of a difference to make up losing by 26 at Oklahoma, losing by 22 to West Virginia, coming off of a two-week COVID absence themselves? I don't think it's that kind of a difference. And you said it, the next four Big 12 games are all very difficult against top 20 teams. I don't see it getting better before it gets worse, and then there will be no more room to run and hide behind a Nigel Pack explanation / excuse. So that's the problem here. If I'm Nigel, I'm the player looking at that, I'm like, man, like, yeah, listen, I can come play. I'm a pretty good player. I was a four-star recruit, but I can't drag all of that behind me. I mean, I can't do that much heavy lifting here.
Yeah, certainly the pressure's on, but I think he's the kind of guy that can handle something like that. I was watching him warm up. He was just as confident as he always is. I tend to pay attention to guys like that when they're on the floor warming up and just kind of seeing how they're going through the motions game by game and how well they're shooting. And by the way, I have all season long, K-State warming up was horrible against West Virginia in this last game. I just wanted to point that out, just about how they were missing everything. It just looked terrible from the start. Knew it was going to be a bad day. But Nigel Pack was out there, and I was kind of wondering, would he play or not? Because, you know, he's just not conditioned, but he did sit out, and he's going to play against Baylor. Now, he does give K-State more of a fighting chance, but not against four straight teams that are in the top 15 in the Big 12. Yeah, maybe this Saturday at 11 a.m. against Texas A&M, who is terrible. That gives you a possibility to win a game. But even when you're looking at the Big 12, you know, maybe TCU. You know, maybe you can get by them. Iowa State, whenever that gets put back on the schedule. You know, Nigel Pack does give you a chance to beat those lower teams in the conference. But all he's going to really provide now is, like you said, spacing on the floor, an extra threat, and maybe more of a chance to narrow the margin when it comes to losing a game, because they're not going to beat these four teams. It's just, it feels somewhat impossible. But maybe they won't lose by 25, and maybe now they'll just lose by 15.
Well, let me be clear. I don't – you say Nigel is somebody that can handle it. I don't say any of what I'm saying to suggest that he's somebody that can't handle it. I just am saying it's an unfair position for him to be in. He's not Michael Beasley. He's not Bill Walker. He's not one of these five-star freshmen that K-State has had. I mean, it's been a while now, but you know, he's not that. Like, he's not going to come make that kind of a difference. And so I think the optics of this right now are like, look, we have nothing else to say to be a real valid defense of this season right now, other than, hey, we're still missing Nigel. And that's just asking too much of a guy to come carry a team that's had a couple of black hole recruiting classes before this past year and just doesn't have enough right now to be going toe-to-toe with what is admittedly a very tough league. But when that becomes your defense in the way that you paint it, now everything has been focused and shifted away to him. That's a tough ask. It's a very tough ask.
It's not the only reason why he's here, but I think a part of the reason why Nigel Pack decided to come to K-State is because there was a tremendous opportunity for him to be such a key role right off the bat. To be the guy, I'm sure even he wasn't expecting that. But he knew the situation K-State was in. Yeah, it could be bad at first. If Nigel can survive this run and still be productive against these four top teams in the conference, that K-State's about to run its toughest stretch, a gauntlet, as you could say, with Texas A&M thrown in there as well, and he continues to provide good minutes. He can score the basketball. He proves to be a bright spot in K-State's lineup against really tough teams in a time where it's just been such a horrible run for K-State. That might be the slimmest, but it might be some optimism as you move through the rest of the season and maybe into next year.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to say, I understand that there's a lot of playing time here and I understand that I'm going to have to do some heavy lifting. But it's another thing to say, well, now, I mean, like, oh, bleep, we're over halfway through the year and in the midst of a historically bad season. And I have to be the guy to say, am I going to have to be the guy to save somebody's job here? Somebody's job on the line as I try to come back from COVID? And Bruce Weber says today that he said Nigel was not able to practice or work out really more than like 45 minutes without getting very winded. So, like, I'm going to be winded and going out there and playing limited minutes, and now, like, I'm thrust into this position where I have to be the savior of this team and jobs and all of that. That's the part that becomes unfair. It's one thing to say, we need you to go do a lot for us. It's another thing to say, all right, this season has been historically bad with a historically bad loss to Fort Hayes, historically bad Big 12 started. Now, hey, buddy, go make it happen. Go bring us back. Go save us.
There's nothing – he has no choice but to embrace this situation he's in. I'm sure Bruce Weber isn't looking for this program to completely turn around. I'm sure he'd love it, of course. We would all like to see see Nigel Pack pull a Patrick Mahomes and completely lead this team to a new promised land, but that is just completely not going to happen. It can't take one person to turn a team that's losing by, 20 points a game in conference play and start winning ball games again and proving all of us wrong that saying K-State just can't win ball games right now, because they're not. Not one person's going to turn it around, but I think we all just need to see it. Just improvement. We need some sort of improvement. Can Nigel Pack, being on the floor, just improve this team? Because if he doesn't, then where the hell do we go from there?
Exactly. I mean, I feel like now that's made the point for me. That's made the point for me, and that's the dire straits of this situation, and that's the pressure that is now on his proverbial back. I guess not even proverbial, that is on his shoulders. We'll see. K-State against Baylor tomorrow night. You can hear it right here on News Radio, KMAN. Number one song of the day next.
Like I'm at a K-State baseball game.
That is what this is like.
Well, John, 1977 Car Wash by Rose Royce, 1 week at number one. It just takes forever to kick in. But the claps are important.
What year?
77.
Yeah, this is 70s as hell. Is this disco?
Yeah, yeah. Rose Royce, an American soul and R&B group from L.A. It's a group. There's nobody in the band named Rose Royce. In 2019, this may be the most famous thing about them other than this song. New York Times Magazine listed Rose Royce among hundreds of artists whose material, their original material, was destroyed in the 2008 Universal fire. Mm. But 11 studio albums, two top
tens. Thank goodness this survived.
And they're only number one. Well, of course, there's plenty of copies of this song out there, but like the original recordings, all that stuff was owned by Universal, and it all burnt up.
Yeah, thank God for that.
So this was from the group's first album called Car Wash, and it was actually turned into a soundtrack for the movie of the same title. Car Wash is a 1976 American comedy film released by Universal, and it starred a number of stand-up comedians, including George Carlin. Now, although Rolls-Royce had already recorded a lot of material for this, they were asked by their producer, Norman Whitfield, to record a few more scores for the film, including this song. Now, Norman Whitfield is a Motown legend, but his inspiration from this song came from when he was sitting at home eating some Kentucky Fried Chicken, and he's watching a baseball game. And then it all of a sudden just came to him that he should write this song, and so he wrote it on a KFC chicken bag. It wasn't on the bucket, it was on a bag.
Okay. I don't ever want to hear, again, rapper sample, it's too easy, like, but the lyrics of these number one songs are simple enough that they can just be written on chicken bags.
Yeah. Well, for, you know, disco. You know.
I mean, how did...
Pave the way for modern-day hip-hop and rap,
do we even consider it to be writing a song? I mean, that sounds like just jotting something on a napkin. Like, no, when I was a kid, I would, like, scribble on napkins when I was bored at a restaurant waiting for the food. That's what this seems more akin to than writing a song.
Well, you know, it's... You know, back then, though, John, in the 70s, they couldn't just hop on a laptop and start jotting down lyrics. You know, you had to grab whatever's around you and start writing it down before you forgot it.
Okay, so, I mean, that was the thing. Like, oh, what if I forget... Working at the car wash, what if I forget that? What if I forget that?
John, this is the
70s. I've got to write this down right now.
This was
working
the 70s.
At the car wash. Oh, so you're saying, like, he's about to drop acid? Like, well, I take this acid, I better figure it out and write down, you know, this LSD may force me to forget working at the car wash.
That's what I was kind of getting at. Memories weren't exactly top-notch back then.
Okay. All right, far be it from me.
Now, John, you might want to look into this, but in 2004, there was a cover version of this song by Christina Aguilera and Missy Elliott. They teamed up to cover this song that went number 63 in the United States. It was released on the Shark Tales soundtrack. And then the icing on the cake here was this song was used in not one, not two, but three episodes of The Office. Season 5 episode Cafe Disco. Go to season 7 with the episode Ultimatum. And then season 9, Here Comes Trouble.
So that means Andy's a cappella group sang this song?
Yes, at the Halloween party.
How many number one songs were not in an episode of The Office? That's what I want to know. Because it seems like every single one.
Michael was a huge fan of the hits.
Michael is definitely a guy that would be a bit... You're right. He would be a big fan of the hits. Yes, that is fair. We have a couple of Bruce Weber quotes that have turned some heads since Saturday. One after the game and one at a Zoom press conference earlier today. We'll let you hear that coming up next.